Hi guys, welcome back to Hear My Voices. It's your host K Did. Come back to you one more time. So guys, let me just tell you guys, thank you guys for listening to the podcast. Thank you for being an amazing audience. I know we're small, but we're gonna get bigger and we're gonna have so much wonderful things for you this year. As you know, we're starting season 4. We have new things in store for you guys. We have a new thing coming up called Hot Topics. It's not today, but just listen out for those things what's coming out. So we'll be dropping initially 5 full episodes a month. We have four, we're going back to four English, and then we're doing one Spanish. So every fourth Wednesday, you'll be getting 2 episodes. If you can listen to Spanish and English, check them out. If you can listen to one or the other, do as you please. As you know, down below, you could be able to follow us on our all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And we'll be just doing more things to kind of generate things and have people have more information about what's out there in the homeless sector. So, yes. So today our guest is Bonnie. She'll be helping us to understand a little bit more about postpartum and things like that. As you know, guys, a good amount of people in the homeless shelter, in the I should say the family homeless shelters, are moms and children. And a lot of people do come in pregnant. Like, you know, myself, when I tried to go in the shelter, I was initially pregnant, but they did deny me, so I wasn't able to be have my baby in shelter. But I went somewhere else, as you know my story. If you watch other videos, I'll tell you more about that. But yes, so that's a little bit about my story. And being pregnant in a shelter is not an easy feat. So we'll make her tell us a little bit about yourself, Bonnie, and what do you do?
Hi, thank you so much. So my name is Bonnie Kirker, and I am a researcher at the NYU Grossman School of Medicine, and I do research on adverse experiences and positive experiences that families face, and the impact that those experiences have on families and young children, and most importantly, how we can try to mitigate those experiences to make sure that all families and children are able to thrive.
That sounds cool. I on my mind only thought of just the moms, but if you do children too, that's amazing. Because you know, the child feels what the parents are feeling. They know, even if they don't know exactly what's happening, they feel your energy and what, you know, how a parent feeling, things like that. So that's what I always think. I don't have a degree in this, guys, but I feel like your children can definitely know how you're feeling based on how your face looking, just your mood and your energy around them. So yes. So can you tell us a little bit about what postpartum mean and how do the signs a person could, like, if I feel like I have it, what would I have to look for?
Yeah, of course. So postpartum depression is one of the most underdiagnosed obstetrical conditions that we have. And it can impact, some studies have found that it impacts up to 20% of women. And some women think that it only happens in the first few months of a child's birth, but it
Right.
actually can be diagnosed up to a full year after a child's birth. So there are lots of changes that happen during that time for women. Some are hormonal and some are life circumstance changes, but all of those changes can really have an impact. And it's very natural for women to have some baby blues at the beginning after childbirth. And baby blues are also attached to hormone changes. But baby blues are things that are not persistent. So it might be you're feeling a little down, or it might be you're feeling a little tired, you can't sleep. But if those feelings are not overwhelming, and if those feelings don't last for a long time, then they're probably baby blues and they're probably going to go away. But if they're persistent, or if they feel so overwhelming that you can't get out of bed, or so overwhelming that you can't leave the house, or so overwhelming that you can't take care of your child, or you can't take a shower, any of those things that are much bigger in your mind and in your life,
Right.
then we start to think of that as potentially being postpartum depression. And I would say if a woman has any concerns at all, to always reach out to a provider.
Right.
Whether it's an obstetric provider, a pediatric provider, or a mental health provider, to ask, to talk about it, and not to be afraid to talk about it, because these things are real and they happen to so many people. And if we don't talk about it, then we can't identify the best ways to get help.
I'm not sure if you're able to answer this, But if a person has depression before they have a baby, is a higher percentage for them to get postpartum depression after they have a baby?
Yeah, you're at higher risk. If you had depression prior to becoming pregnant, that does put you at higher risk. That doesn't mean you can't have it if you haven't been depressed before, but it
Right.
definitely does put you at higher risk.
Wow. That's interesting, to be honest. You said usually it could, people think it's usually a couple of months after. Why exactly is, like, you say you can get it in like a year span? Why is it like a year, or is it longer still than a year? Why exactly is that?
Well, the mental health symptoms and depression can certainly come into play past that year. But
Right.
generally, we think of that first year of infancy as a time of adjustment and a time of really large life changes for a family and for a woman in particular. And so, and that's also a time when hormones are fluctuating. Maybe there's breastfeeding happening. There's lots of different hormonal changes that take place during that time. So that's why we generally think of it as that time period. But you raise a good point because you can still be impacted by depression after that period, and that's still important to get help even after that first year.
So I know you were saying like some symptoms of what you should see exactly. Because some people I know don't take showers every day, or just certain things, like you was naming some things. If that's like, particularly, I like to take a shower every day, but not everybody does that. So how can you tell from certain things of where you are already that you're, is this not your regular thinking, or is it really baby blues?
Yeah, I think it's really if it's something that you're that is out of the ordinary for you. Now, once you have a baby, your ordinary is going to change, right? So you might
Right.
not know. But I think there's generally people generally have a feeling of life just being too overwhelming or a really high level of anxiety. People don't always realize that postpartum depression also has an anxiety component of being super, super anxious and at high alert, after a baby is born. And again, some of this is totally within the realm of baby blues and will go away. But if it doesn't go away after a few days, or if it's so overwhelming that you're not able to do what you want to do, you're not able to function in the way that you would like to function.
Right.
Then I think, I would certainly reach out for help.
If I was like, because most of the time I feel like when men are with their spouse or girlfriend or whatever, and they don't understand exactly what they can do to help, how they can, because you know, sometimes when you're acting a certain way, you don't realize it, but the people around you can see the problem. How can a person from the outside be able to help a person with this particular situation, or even point out that you might need help for this particular thing?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's not easy, right? Because if you've just had a baby and you're tired and you're not feeling well, having someone say to you, "Hey, like you don't seem right," is not necessarily going to go so well.
Right.
And so I think entering a conversation with empathy. Entering a conversation, really trying to understand where the person is and let her know that you totally understand, how challenging this time is and that but that you're a little bit concerned and maybe it would be a good idea to talk to somebody because if you don't talk to somebody, it can get a lot worse. And if
Right.
it gets a lot worse, it can impact not only the woman, but also the baby.
Right.
There are a lot of studies that show correlations between ongoing postpartum depression and attachment issues with young babies, with behavioral issues in young babies, with abilities of moms to take care of the babies, to be able to react in an emergency or to be able to get all of the baby's vaccines or put them in the right safety restraints in a car or, all those types of things that can really impact a child's life are really dependent on the caretaker. And if the
Right.
caretaker is the mom and the mom is feeling depressed and not able to do those things, then it really could endanger the child. And so I'm not suggesting you start with that, but I think
Right.
If you get help, then you can curtail any potential issues that might come up.
That makes sense. That makes total sense. If you're a mom who's listening to this, and of course, I don't know who you are, whoever's listening, but take care of yourself the best way you can because you want to be there for your baby. You want to live long. You want to make sure that your mind and every body and soul is good. And if you think you need help, if the your personal doctor, I know some doctors don't listen to everybody, might say, you'll be fine. You'll be all right. Go to somebody who can you think it will really listen to you and really give you the information that you need and the help that you need because you want to be the best you for you and your child at the end of the day. You don't want it to be getting so bad that you can't live life and then because of that you do something crazy what you didn't want to do in the first place. But by the time that happened it's almost too late. How long can this like postpartum can you the real question is how long can it go for, if that makes any sense? And how like can you kind of grow out of it? Like, if 2 or 3 years, would you still be in this funk, or eventually your body will kind of level itself out to kind of take you out of this funk, or do you have to get help to really get this under control?
Think that's person dependent. I don't think I can answer that in a general way, but I
Right.
will say that for many people, getting help really, really can help them.
Okay.
And I don't know that you want to. I don't know that people would want to necessarily wait and just see because maybe
Right.
it will get better, but maybe it won't get better, or maybe it'll get worse. So why
Right.
not get the help at the beginning?
That's so true. So you said in the beginning that you did work in shelters and things like, as you know, guys, this is about, homeless awareness and knowing how to get help in shelter and things like that. So as you know, well, you don't know, I'm telling you right now, that she also works in shelters and things like that. What do you do exactly for the families in shelters and how did that continue on?
So, I mentioned that rates of postpartum depression are fairly high in the general society. And
Right.
things that we know can make depression worse are things like stress and limited supports. And I think women who are in shelter definitely are going through stressful situations, and
Right.
many of them don't have as many supports as they might want or need. So the risk is even greater when you're in those types of situations. So being in shelter is definitely a risk factor that can increase rates of depression and postpartum depression in particular.
Right.
So I worked on an intervention that's called ROSE. It's Reach Out and Stay Strong, Essentials for
Like
New
that.
Mothers. And we adapted ROSE to the shelter population. And the new intervention or the new name we gave this was Strong in Shelter or SIS, because we really were trying to focus on women being strong. And SIS or ROSE is really it's a support. It's a way to help mothers realize that the changes they're going through are normal, and that everybody's pregnancy and everybody's birth is not rosy, is not perfect, is not, the smiling commercial with the woman who is perfectly made up with a diaper, a diaper bag. Like that's
Right.
not how most people are, or the ads you see in magazines or on social media. So we really wanted to sort of break some myths about pregnancy and about new motherhood and about just about what the reality is, and to normalize what people are feeling. So that's a big part of the intervention. Another part is psychoeducation, which is really just teaching people about the difference between baby blues and postpartum depression, how to get help. And then we really the intervention really focuses on stress reduction and self-care, how to take care of yourself, things you can do yourself to help yourself feel better, and to help yourself be in a position to protect yourself from some of these feelings, and support how to really reach out and think about all the types of support that you might not be thinking about that you might have in your life. Another really important piece of this is that it's okay to ask for help, and that when you think about what motherhood is, it's not meant to be gone through without help. And so,
That's true.
and for women in shelter in particular, the way women are communicated with in shelter is not always, from all the systems that they're dealing with, are is not always the nicest or the
Right.
most kind and empathetic way. And so that's what people get used to. They get used to that kind of communication. And this intervention really tries to stress effective modes of communication to get the help that you need from the people. So who could you be asking for help from, and what could you be asking, and in what way? And then how do you go about doing that in a way that makes it most likely that you'll get the help that you need?
That's good. I like that they have all those things and they put it in together as one. You did talk about self-care. If you had to pick, maybe there's more than five, probably five things a person who's ever listening to this, they can do to kind of do self-care. Or is it just programmed to each person what they particularly like for self-care? Which, like, if you could name some a person could do at home if they're listening to
Sure.
this. Yeah.
The thing about self-care, what's so great about it is that it is so dependent on what you like. So self-care for one person could be going for a walk. For someone else, it could be watching their favorite TV show or reading a book.
Me.
It could be putting on music and dancing. And if you have a baby, it could be dancing with your baby, holding your baby and dancing with them. If you could be getting your nails done, it could be a million and one things, but I think one thing I will stress is that there is a lot of research to show that if you get up and move and actually do some exercise, that can boost mood. So it's when you're feeling down, it's so hard to get up and actually get
That's true.
yourself to do something, right? But once you do, it starts a cycle of helping you to feel better. And so it's really important to give yourself that push and to get in the habit of doing this before you feel bad, right? So
Right.
then when you if you do start to feel down, you're already in the habit and you can help pick yourself back up. Of course,
Gotcha.
I will say, like, this is all for people who, and this is really important, that this is all for people who are symptomatic, have like certain symptoms of depression or are starting to feel down. But for somebody who is clinically depressed, then they really do need to be in treatment.
Okay.
And that treatment can look like a lot of different things. But this, what I'm talking about now, is really preventive. It's really saying these are things you can do to keep yourself healthy. These are things you can do if you're starting to feel down, to help prevent worse symptoms. But if someone is truly clinically depressed, they do need to be in treatment.
That's so true. Take heed to that, guys. Again, I don't have a degree in any of this. I'm just asking the interviewer, so to tell her expertise on her what she does, right? And if you are a person who has is clinically depressed, you do need to go out and seek help, because that's the best way we can, we can't help you through the screen, we can't help you through the podcast, we can give you tips and tricks, but a person who's going to be tailored to you and what you're going on in your life will be the best person to help you get out, get ahead of this thing, so it doesn't get to a worser and darker place in your life. So really take heed to that. And movement is always good. If when your mom, it helps you lose weight along with the breast milk. So it might be a way to kind of, get your curves back and everything and make you feel good. And when you look good, you feel good, when you look good to yourself, it doesn't matter what people, society says you should look like. It matters what you think in your eyes, you look like in the mirror, if you're satisfied with what you see back at you. So just take that into consideration when you listen to this podcast. Again, I don't have a degree in this, but I was homeless and I know how it can be. If you don't know, I do have depression and I do have anxiety, so I know how it could be down, in the shelter, and how just living in that atmosphere alone makes you feel depressed. It brings a lot on you, and to be a newly mom or a mom who just had a baby a couple of months ago and have to be in this position, which you didn't want to be in the first place, can be overwhelming and it can be a lot. So please get the help that you need. And things like that. The ROSE program, well, is a different name outside in the shelter. Can they go there anytime? Can they sign up for it? Does every shelter have this program? How does this work exactly?
So we're working on on spreading this throughout the shelters. I don't think it's available in every shelter quite yet, but it's something that we're working on.
So the ROSE program, you said, is outside of shelter. If a person listening to this right now and they're in shelter, would they be able to sign up for the ROSE program outside of shelter to get help before it comes inside of shelter?
So the ROSE program is implemented in some clinic spaces and in some different spaces around the city, but it depends on where they are and where they live. So it would be hard for me to say off the top of my head. Sorry.
Is no, you're completely fine. Is there a website they can kind of type in this information, say where they are, and see if that one's close to them to get help? Or is it based on like if a doctor recommends you?
It depends on the site. I think every site works differently.
Okay.
I'm not sure that there is a website that will tell you about the program, but I don't know that that site has all the locations on it. So I would say the best thing to do is to ask your provider, because there are other programs that are like ROSE also. There are other types of supports out there. And so I think that's just an example. And
Right.
I would say to ask your provider for programs that might be near you and programs that you might be able to be eligible for.
Right. Also, sometimes if you, I don't know how providers are work. Well, I haven't been pregnant for a while, so I don't know how they work. Sometimes a clinic can have like a long thing and you can't get to a person in time. Also, you can go through insurance and see what programs they might have, because they usually know what they have in their network of what your insurance can take, and maybe probably get a few together and see what your doctor might think is the best for you or the best fit for you and your family and your household and things like that. So I think that'd be another way of finding these resources and taking care of yourself and making sure you're good. And I would say when you go to your provider, I know sometimes telling doctors, like, I'm a person, I'm scared of the doctor. So you wouldn't be the first one. You're like me. If you're scared of the doctor, you're like me. I don't like going to tell them everything, even though it's the best thing is to tell them everything. It's better to be preventive. And it's worse to be having a disease and then trying to fix it after, because sometimes when you fix it too late, it might have done a lot of damage to your body. So it's better you tell, if the doctor asks you, how are you feeling? Try to be as honest as you can and tell them how you're feeling and really disclose everything, because you might think you're okay, but when you say it out loud, doctor's like, let's get into this part more. Maybe you need help with that. And so they could, even if your spouse doesn't want to tell you, they're too scared to tell you at the time, your doctor has the degree and everything they need to tell you what you actually need to be better. So just be truthful when you go to the office about how you're feeling and how's everything really going. Don't keep nothing. You know, I know sometimes with a mom, you want to be make sure people think that, oh my God, I'm the greatest mom. But especially if you're a first time mom, we don't have it together. We're just trying to make it. All the books you read do not prepare you for this little bundle of joy. It really doesn't. No matter how many people say, oh my gosh, do this and this and this, but then all of a sudden this happening, like, the book didn't say that was gonna happen. The book never said that poop would be that ruddy. Like, it just does not prepare you for being a mom at all. So just, people are there to help you. People get paid to help you. Friends and family is also a good resource if you need somebody to hold your hand to go through this experience. Just don't isolate yourself. I think that's the worst thing when you have depression. And I know this because, again, I'm the girl who apparently has it all. But isolating yourself is never a good thing. Really getting out to the people to be out there. I know some people don't like to talk to be around a lot of people at all times, but certain situations like this, when there's high stress, you do need to be around other people or talk to, have somebody you could talk to and rely on. And I know doctors are not always going to be there. They have certain office hours, you know, things like that. But have somebody you can kind of lock in with and say, today I'm not feeling like good today. Maybe because somebody could call you and say, just, you know, cheer you up a little bit. Have somebody in your life that you could be really connected with. I think that's a good thing. I know in shelter it could be harder because sometimes you ever tell your friends and family that you're in shelter. You're just in there, you're alone. But try to have one trusted person that you have, that you could tell that, you know, I'm feeling like this today, to really help cheer you up. And I know all the time when people talk, they might not all say the best thing, but a lot of people, the you pick a person that really loves you, they mean well. They don't mean to hurt you. They're just trying their best to keep you know, more happier and better spirits. So, yeah. If do you have any other things that you think people who know somebody in shelter should, you know, to look out for? Like, if a shelter staff person was looking at this video and they saw their client acting a certain way, even though they only see them a certain amount of times a month, what do you think a shelter staff should be looking for in this client to see probably they would need help or to refer them to somebody who can help them with certain situations like that?
I mean, I think that's hard to answer. As I said, I am not a therapist
Right.
myself. But I would think, any behavior that seems out of the ordinary, anyone who's seeming very withdrawn or acting in ways that don't seem like themselves, I think shelter staff would be in a good position to recommend that somebody get the help that they need. And shelter staff do meet with families and I think are looking out for that kind of thing. So
Right.
I do think that's a good resource for women in shelter, especially if they're feeling super isolated. And I know many shelters now do have groups for women to try to break that isolation. But yeah, I mean, I think anybody who sees behavior that isn't the person's normal behavior or sees a change
Sure.
should be alerted.
That's a good tip, guys. So if you work in a shelter and you see like maybe Sharon, Khadija, somebody, if you are you okay, you could ask. Obviously the polite way, because the person might not even realize what's going on in their life, to be honest. And it might be a startling, thing, but just be very aware of those things. So yes. So do you have any last words that you would like to tell people about certain things in the postpartum world and what to things like that? Any last words for us on the podcast?
I would just say, not to be hard on yourself if things are tough or you're having a hard time. That happens to a lot of women, and that there's no shame at all in getting help. In fact, you're being a really good mother if you do get help, because you're helping not only yourself but your child as well. And so, I think it's important that we all know how to look out for ourselves, know the signs. If you're feeling down, if you're feeling very anxious, please seek help for yourself and for your family.
I know I said this was the end, guys, but I just definitely thought about something. Because you say you also work with children. Do you work with children on hand, or you mostly work with the children with the mom in a way for the research? Like, how does it show that a mom who didn't get help, how does it affect their kids in the long run in the research world?
So there's a lot of research that shows that it can impact children's behavior. It can impact children's mental health, both their own depression or their own anxiety. There's even research to show that it can lead to different cognitive outcomes, so
Wow.
different developmental outcomes. And there's some research that also shows connections to homelessness and unemployment in children down the road. And so, I mean, there's a lot of factors that go in there, but
Right.
I think the bottom line is that it can really have long-term outcomes for your children. And so, in addition to getting help for yourself, it's really important to get help for your family.
Okay. I did not know. The cognitive thing kind of took me off guard a little bit, because that's a very important thing. Like everything is important, but it's just thinking about how that one thing what could be helped if you just get help for it can really affect not just yourself, but affecting other people around you. I mean, I think sometimes we don't think about those things with depression, that the people around you are watching you kind of fall in a way, and they love you and they want you to get better, but you have to also be able to help yourself to. You have to want help to be able to get the help, majority of the times, unless you hurt yourself. And we don't want you to go down that route, because it's just not a good one. So if you can, I know it's hard, pick yourself up, but really get help, and you matter and you're important. And we want you to stay here with us, and we want you to make sure you can help your family and be a productive member of your family. And you're amazing. Like, no matter who's listening to this, I'm just saying you are amazing. And we just want you to live long and be successful in life, no matter if you're homeless or not homeless. But thank you guys for watching. Thank you guys for listening, depending on how you see this podcast. And follow us on all our social media platforms. I hope you took this information in and really to be able to identify it in yourself when it happens to you. If it happens to you, I hope it doesn't happen to you, but we just don't know when it's going to happen. You could have five children, and all of a sudden, the sixth child, you have postpartum. You just never know how this thing can deal out. If you're a person around somebody who you think has a science for these things, in a nice way, point it out to them, and help them get help. And, just don't point it out and don't have any solution. Try to help them with a solution to get yourself better. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for being amazing. And I'll see you guys next time. Bye.